Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
New York, the glitz, the glamour, the exciting Mutt-tropolis, the sparkling kitty city that never sleeps. Step onto the sexy streets of animal attraction that is New York City. Welcome to Pets in the City, Life in the Urban Jungle. Join host Diane West as she explores the exciting lives, loves, and laments of the people and pets in the world's greatest city. Pets in the City, like the city itself, has something for everyone. Celebrity pet sightings, pet events, and news and reviews with the hottest movers, shakers, and tail waggers in New York. So get ready to get dressed to the canines and take a bite out of the Big Apple with your Pets in the City host, Diane West.
Hello, and thank you for joining us once again on Pets in the City on Pet Life Radio. I'm Diane West, your host, and I am publisher and editor-in-chief of New York Tales magazine here in New York. Our topic for today's show, our first topic, is actually a rather disturbing one, so I just wanted to give you a heads up about that, but it's a very important subject that really more people need to be aware of. I wish I could tell you that this was an urban legend, but unfortunately I cannot. It is very true. What I'm talking about is dogs being electrocuted on the streets of New York due to faulty wiring or aged infrastructure from lampposts that are leaking stray voltage or sometimes electrified plates from underground wiring. And again, not to alarm anyone, this does not mean it's not safe to walk the streets of New York. But there have been a number of growing incidences, especially in the last 5 years. A number of you may have heard of the tragedy of Jody Lane, who in winter of 2003 had been walking her dogs in the village and was electrocuted and died. And again, this was from faulty wiring underneath the street. Since then, a number of other incidents have happened. At least one more person has allegedly died in a related incident having to do with stray voltage, perhaps. And a number of dogs have been severely injured and died. Where I'm going to be taking you today is a press conference I attended on June 8th, 2008, which was called by Denise Buffa, a New York Post reporter who unfortunately herself had lost her dog, Mushy, in June of 2007, about 1 year ago today, from stray voltage. And she had called the press conference to announce her lawsuit against Con Edison, who provides electricity and power to the New York City area, for the negligent death of her dog. So we will be right back with that story.
All right, this is my stop, Commercial Boulevard. Yeah, that's funny. Pets in the City will be back in a New York minute. Don't go anywhere.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, all you yuppie puppies and city kitties, Pets in the City is back with more urban animals and cool cosmopolitan critters. Try saying that three times fast. Right, Diane?
And we're back again. Once again, you're listening to Pets in the City on Pet Life Radio. I'm Diane West, your host. And where we are is a press conference in Marcus Garvey Park, which is a beautiful park in West Harlem section of Manhattan in the West 20s near Lenox. And we are at a press conference that has been called by Denise Buffa, a New York Post reporter who lost her very large Mastiff, Mushy, about 1 year ago today in this very park. And there is flowers near the lamppost, an area in which Mushy had gotten electrocuted. And we are having the press conference right adjacent to that. The first person that you're going to be hearing from is Celia Singh, who unfortunately just weeks ago had lost her dog Sebastian, a beautiful Siberian Husky, in the Long Island City part of Queens. Now, she was walking her dog, regular walk, and again, this was just weeks ago, late May, and unfortunately, the preliminary report showed that Sebastian died in front of her eyes of stray electrical voltage. So you'll be hearing from Celia Singh first. You'll also be hearing from Denise Buffer herself, and you will also be hearing from Denise Buffer's lawyer, Peter Gleason, who is representing her against Con Edison in this case. So next person you hear will be Celia recounting that terrible day that she lost Sebastian.
I was walking him for his last walk of the evening. It was after midnight. It was more like 12:45 in the morning. And I take my dogs separate because I give them, they have quality time. We were walking on 28th Street, one block from my house. And all he did was he just peed on the lamppost. As soon as he put his foot down, he jumped and then he just started shaking and shaking and shaking. And my boy did not stop shaking until he stopped breathing. And I'm pulling him and screaming at him, Sebastian, get up, what's the matter with you? Get up. And he wouldn't.
None of this should be happening.
My boy was dead. And when you look for help at that time of morning, there's nobody there to help you. Nobody came out except for the people that live across the street. Con Ed still hasn't said nothing. 911 told a woman, it's not an emergency, even though she said a dog was electrocuted. They told her to throw the dog in the garbage and then call 311. That was the answer. If I would have took that phone call, I would have had a heart attack and just died. That's my baby you're talking about. It's not garbage, it was my boy.
When someone dials 911 and needs an ambulance for their pet, there should be a way to patch the person through. It's the simple press of a button.
If I may comment, they both bring up a very important point. It is the intrinsic value of a pet is not recognized in the state of New York, where, believe it or not, states like Alaska and Tennessee recognize the intrinsic value, the irreplaceable value of a home pet, which New York State does not. I call on the governor and the state legislature, the governor who happens to be a resident in this area, to change the law. Because until they change the law, both Con Edison and the city of New York will view this just as an operating expense. What would the value of a dog be? Could it be $3,000, $4,000, $10,000? They can take that off their bottom line without cutting a sweat. We need the law changed to put intrinsic value on our pets.
Do you have a response from Con Edison in relation to this again?
None whatsoever.
What do you want Con Ed to do? What are you looking for to do at this point? What do you want?
I want them to fix every lamppost in the city of New York. I want them to eradicate stray voltage throughout our great city. There is no reason why we have to walk around wondering if we are going to come back dead or alive. No reason for it.
No one can identify, I mean, unfortunately, until they've actually gone through that. And as much as she loved her dog, it's the same way that I love my baby. There's no comparison to a kid. That was my kid. That was my baby. And that's no bringing him back. There's no money amount in the world that would ever bring back my boy and what he did for me.
We are here with
Denise Buffer.
And unfortunately, Denise has lost her dog, Mushy, and we are here at the marking of his 1 year of passing away right here in Marcus Garvey Park, which is otherwise a very beautiful park, and you wouldn't think it was dangerous. But we're going to have Denise tell us what a typical day was with Mushy, because she had a really wonderful relationship with this large mastiff. So just a little bit about.
In the morning, every morning I'd get up, barely have time to brush my teeth, throw on my dog clothes, which consists of stained sweats and etc. We all know how we dress to walk our dogs. Snap on the leash, go out the door. We'd come to Marcus Garvey. I would take him to the dog run. He would enjoy his run with the other dogs. And then I'd walk him around the park. And that morning he was running free as a bird on the end of his extension leash. That's about as free as you can get in New York City besides the dog run. So I was kind of happy he was enjoying his little trot. And then suddenly I felt that he had stopped at the end of the leash, and I turned around because he was a little bit behind me. And I saw him frozen. It seemed like he was frozen in an invisible net. And he looked at me with these pleading eyes as like a child would. Like, you're dog lovers, so you know. He was looking at me with these eyes that said, "Help me, Mommy, help me, Mommy." And I realized he was getting electrocuted. So I knew I couldn't go near him, but I tugged the leash gently because by the time I did, his legs were crumpling underneath him and he looked like a cripple. And then he stumbled toward me and I screamed at him, "Mushy, come to Mommy, come to Mommy, come to Mommy." So he stumbled toward me and he collapsed. And then I pet his head to console him, to tell him everything was going to be all right. And then he tried to bite me, which Mushy would never, ever, ever, ever do. And I knew he was in great, great distress. I called 911, and there is no way for 911 in New York City to hook you up with a pet ambulance. They just don't do it. They didn't take my call very seriously. And then a teacher happened to come by, and she helped me transport Mushy to my home. And I managed to get him into my van, and I took him to the vet's office. He died 9 hours later.
And the vet had actually said this looked like a case of electrocution to them?
Yes. I explained to them what had happened. Because he was a big dog, they said he might have suffered a seizure at first, and I was astounded by the suggestion because they hadn't witnessed what I had witnessed. And I told them he was only 5 years old. He had never suffered a seizure in his life. And then they dismissed that possibility because his symptoms were consistent with electrocution.
So by the time you got him to the vet office, and again, I realize this is very difficult, but you really just had enough time to say goodbye?
Actually, he was acting and looking quite normal at that point, and I left him there. He looked like he was stunned, but he was standing. And I went to make sure that the pole had been taken care of, because I didn't want this to happen to a person. I got back to him later. He came into the visiting room, and I was yelling at the doctor, saying he wasn't the same. He was declining. And that's when they took some blood and other tests, and they told me to that his kidney, his liver, and other parts of his body were failing, like three major organs. So I knew he wasn't going to survive. And I was there when he passed.
And through this grief, it's clear that you're hoping to try and prevent it from others as well.
Yes, I'm trying to alert people to stray voltage, tell them it exists. People think it won't happen to them, and I thought the same thing, but it does exist. I have no solutions, but if you could, I would suggest you don't walk your dog in the rain, which is an absurd suggestion, I guess, but because you just can't see what's happening. I just want to raise awareness, and I want Con Ed to do something about it along with the city.
Okay, and again, thank you for sharing this very difficult and painful memory for us with us at Pet Life Radio.
Thank you so much.
Can you state your name again, please?
Peter Gleason of the law firm of Levine & Gilbert.
And can you just tell us a little bit about the nature of the lawsuit?
It's a tort action based in negligence on the fact that there was stray voltage where there shouldn't have been stray voltage. During the discovery process, we are going to find out what work was done, how many complaints were received at this location, and what work was subsequently done and the findings thereof. So both the City of New York and Con Edison will be required to provide that information to me. Now, as Denise told you, these lawsuits have a finite value. It's the value of the dog plus any incidental expenses. Denise, I'm happy to represent Denise, and I'm representing her pro bono. This is not about the money. This is about public safety, and it's the safety of not only our pets, but also our children and our loved ones. This is something that both Con Ed and the City of New York view as a simple operating expense, which is quite disgusting.
Now, it seems like you have a two-tiered hurdle in front of you. I guess one is, I guess Con Ed would say to you, look, it's just not realistic for us to check every single stray voltage in the vast miles and miles of New York City infrastructure. And again, as you slightly referred to, at least in New York, the value of a dog is generally a proprietary one. So I guess in two parts, what do you say to Con Ed saying, look, you're asking us to do the impossible, and secondly, it is just a dog?
Well, it isn't just a dog, first of all. It's a family member, and it's a family member that provided comfort, solace, protection to her owner, Denise Buffa. With regards to Con Ed, they're viewing this, again, it's just a finite liability here. If the state legislature can have the wherewithal to change the law, giving more than just an intrinsic value to a household pet, then I think Con Ed will open their eyes and wake up to this situation. They have billions of dollars of profit every year, and they know if they have to pay $10,000 here, $5,000 here, they can absolutely do that, and it doesn't affect their bottom line one scintilla.
But doesn't the law have to be changed to recognize the intrinsic value of a pet before you can, I guess, pursue that line of reasoning?
Yes and no. Yes, you want to take a dual approach to this. You want to raise public awareness about this, because anybody in the city of New York with a child that listens to your show or watches any of the media reports on this would be shocked, no pun intended, would be shocked to know that their children are playing in parks and running on streets that could be their death trap.
And I guess last thing, and sorry, I just want to recap it here. You said Denise said each block has one incidence of stray voltage. Is there a reference for that?
There are people who are public advocates in their own right that are going around taking measurements, and they have found there is stray voltage. And the problem is, again, the infrastructure of this city is so old. You know, we saw the steam explosion on 42nd Street last summer. It is so old and decrepit that they are being reactive to these situations rather than being proactive.
So, okay, thank you very much for speaking with us, and will you keep us apprised, please, of as the lawsuit progresses?
Absolutely. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. And now I'm sitting here post-press conference here with Blair Sorrell of Infrashock.com, and Blair has actually been a pioneer in really trying to sound the alarm about this very bizarre problem going on in New York City. So I'm going to have Blair tell us a little bit about the history of how she got involved, how she first became aware of it, and how she became, I guess, an unlikely activist and pioneer for this cause. So go ahead, Blair.
I've been involved with this issue for nearly 6 years. I read a piece about Mark Kerr's dog dying in the West Village in 2001 after a snowfall from being walked into a lamppost, and of course it disturbed me. But what I found equally disturbing is that nobody has furnished any kind of outreach on this particular issue, and clearly infrastructure is ubiquitous. We all experience it. We all walk the same streets. I wanted to say something, and I wasn't really sure how to go about it, but I did contact the civic, and naturally the humane organizations. Ultimately ended up doing my own outreach, and that's when I began to develop SPIN. Diane has always been a proponent of my advocacy, which was quite primitive. It was a simple flyer. And I have recently launched a website. The website maps electrified areas, and what's important to know is that what is reported on the mapping is monitored by Con Edison. I'm trying to arrange for those areas to be prioritized for service. Also, what's really key is that there are protective guidelines year-round. I would urge the general public, where and when possible, to stay off and away from the equipment. You really don't know its condition. And the only way you would find out if there was voltage leakage would be retroactive, which means whether you or your dog or child unfortunately got shocked. It could be a tingle, but it could be worse. And I'm trying to reduce injury and fatality. Of concern are manholes, service boxes or junction boxes as they're known, lamppost compartments and traffic lights, even if intact, can leak. If this photocell in the lamp is damaged, the light will leak whether it's illuminated or not. So as a guideline, I would stay night and day away from them when you can. Fire call boxes, phone booths, decorative lighting, and the newer delivery doors are motorized, so they have the potential to leak. How likely this is? I would say just more likely, given that the equipment is deteriorating And all cities, even rural areas, are experiencing this year-round. We've got a report this week from Utah. Florida had a fatality May 21st, and Florida even has the most stray voltage incidents spiking in June. Year-round outdoor activity, barefoot or sandaled culture, soil salinity are the key factors. In this area, if you watch where you walk and walk prudently, you will reduce your risk. But that doesn't mean being frightened of walking. It just means walking safer, just as you would look both ways before crossing a street.
So what are the, safety signals that one could look for when they are walking around? Are there any kind of hints that say, okay, this might be an electrified situation potentially?
Definitely, if you see something smoking from a manhole, that could also be steam, but I would not walk on it, and I would really value if you reported it to InfraShock and it does get service, because that could potentially implode. And even if it doesn't, it would be approximately 250 degrees for you, your dog, your child, and you could be wearing open-toed shoes, cutaway shoes. Definitely tampered equipment, and we see a lot of tampered fire call boxes, phone booths. The compartments of street lights are often vandalized. There's a lot of power piracy, and where there's vandalism, there is a good potential for stray voltage. So if you see damaged equipment, you can also put it on the site, and that's of course doing a public service. The general guideline is whether the equipment looks tampered or not, to stay away from it if possible. Please, as a public service and for your own well-being, report tampered equipment as well. Thank you.
And I'm just sorry, one more thing. I know that there has been some, as Denise has said and Cecilia, that they are indeed going to sue Con Edison. I know in your own relationship with Con Edison, you felt that they are at first not trying and then they're trying, but are you working with Con Edison at this point to try and resolve the issue?
I just came from the Jody Lane National Conference. I was the first non-electrical person ever invited. I have that dubious distinction. I meet with them monthly. They are sincerely trying, but there are 92,000 miles of infrastructure and all cities are experiencing these problems. Boston has had a task force for over 3 years, Baltimore, Chicago. D.C. has a preponderance of manhole implosions. And truthfully, we expect more summer than winter incidents. But the point is, they are meeting with me. They do look at the site. They want people to utilize the mapping, as do I, of course. They, as all utilities, have inherited a tremendous problem. Deregulation, we see as the key factor, and of course, infrastructure deterioration. They have their own website for public service. They go to community board meetings. They do invite people to approach them, the DOT, the fire department, the Department of Buildings. So they are communitarian in their approach these days, but they are in a difficult situation. I'm not condoning shoddy workmanship on anyone's part, but I am saying ultimately it's a pedestrian who has to watch out for himself with so much infrastructure and so few Sarnoff trucks wheeling around that may pick up stray voltage. And stray means that it comes and goes, so it may not be there when a Sarnoff truck comes by. So vigilance and avoidance are the key words to avoiding a mishap.
And thank you, Blair. Once again, Blair's website is infrashock.com. I'm going to spell it for you. It's infrashock.com. And again, this is really a public service and safety site that will help you really be aware of where potential shock sites may be. Again, just to reiterate, this is not to be alarmist, but just really a call to be a bit more cautious if you encounter a potentially frayed stray voltage. So again, I want to thank Blair for speaking with us today. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Anytime.
All right, this is my stop, Commercial Boulevard. Yeah, that's funny. Pets in the City will be back in a New York minute. Don't go anywhere.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, all you yuppie puppies and city kitties, Pets in the City is back with more urban animals and cool cosmopolitan critters. Try saying that three times fast. Right, Diane?
Well, we are here on a rather unseasonably warm day here in Washington Square Park, which is very famous and very beautiful, and it's right next door to NYU. A lot of people call it part of the NYU campus for that reason. But right here and today, I am sitting with someone who devotes a lot of their life to helping cats in New York City. So without further ado, I'll have her introduce herself and her group. This being National Adopt a Shelter Cat Month, we definitely want to give a shout out to all the kitty cats and the people that love them. So go ahead, Courtney.
My name is Courtney Kistler. I'm a volunteer with Kitty Kind. I volunteer at the shelter as well as do publicity and PR for and events for them. And we're all feline, a no-kill rescue and adoption group located in Petco inside the store in Union Square.
Now, Union Square, that's the one on 17th and Broadway, right?
17th and Broadway, exactly.
What do you see? I mean, you see a lot of cats. How many cats would you say your organization alone gets in terms of trying to help find homes for?
I would say that I would put it this way, on a weekly basis, we receive probably on average 3 to 5 cats intake, but there are times also when somebody will bring in newborn kittens, maybe a box of 7 newborn kittens that they may have found somewhere in their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to put statistics behind it because it always varies.
Now, when you say found somewhere in their neighborhood, I mean, where are these cats coming from?
They're coming from all over. I know that the outer boroughs, Brooklyn and Queens, and also in the Bronx, there are a lot of stray cats, and there are a lot of them, and they don't belong to anybody. They don't get spayed or neutered, and so they breed.
Now, what's the special challenge for you, especially in your position as trying to get the word out about the cats, especially in New York? I mean, you know, everyone loves dogs here, but from what I understand, a lot of people do have cats.
Yes, I have 3 cats, actually. I have 2 older cats, and I have a kitten, and they're all from Kitty Kind. And the challenge is, I think for us, the challenge is space and paying for vet care. I know with all the groups around New York City, they have to have vet care for all of their cats. Sometimes if they are given a cat with no papers or anything, they have to take it to the vet to find out if, you know, if it's healthy or if it's not or whatever. And also it's really important to have good, reliable volunteers doing a lot of the behind-the-scenes work, taking care of the adoption space. So it's important to have a good volunteer coordinator and somebody that can also, or a couple people that can also, you know, keep the environment positive so that you can retain those volunteers.
Now, are there some reasons that seem to come up more consistently than others as to why people give up their cats?
I've heard that the economy is having an impact on people's ability to take care of things like pets, and so they're therefore turning them over. And other times, there is a number of reasons that somebody will give up their pet. And some are good reasons, some are bad reasons, some people have no reason. It just varies. You know, we're there to take in the cat and do everything in our power to find it a good home. And that's what our work is.
Now, with cats, I understand a lot of the surrender is allergies. Would you say that's overstated, understated?
I'm not really the one to ask. I think that's... To answer that question, you're going to get more of an opinion than anything else, but there are ways to combat an allergy, and some people, it works with some people, and, you know, I'm not really sure. That's definitely something to explore more, though.
Now, as if it was hard enough to get some beautiful, friendly, nice cats adopted, Kitty Kind also has a special section for what they call special cats.
Yes, we have our extra special cats adoption program where we highlight these cats and try to educate the public on cats with varying needs, that it's not something that can deter somebody from adopting a cat, that there are ways to take care of a cat that might have, you know, an extra special need here and there, that it doesn't need to be too much of a burden. There are ways to take care of a cat, for example, that has diabetes at low cost. And often those cats are the ones that show the most gratitude because they're overlooked and, you know, they're sometimes given up because of their, you know, special need. But we want to highlight them. We want to show people that they're wonderful. They're absolutely wonderful, and you know, they make just as great companions as any other cat, and they're there. We have them. We value them very well, just as we would all the other cats.
Now, where do these special cats come from? Do they come from people that just feel they don't have the time or the wherewithal to take care of them?
I'm not sure that I would say that necessarily. They come from all over. You know, with all the cats, it's hard to pinpoint one place or one reason that we get cats turned in or we get kittens found. It's just a number of things. It varies. You know, I wish I could give you a really straight answer, but I just, you know, when it comes to the animal rescue world, there's just always so many different reasons and so many different variants.
Now, if you wanted to actually take on one of these special cats, which you say are full of affection and gratitude and sound like they'd really be cuddly cats, is there something that should be, I guess, in place with your life? I guess you need a little bit more time to take care of them and such? Or
not necessarily. I would say the best thing to do is go to a shelter, you know, go to Kittykind and Petco in Union Square, talk to an adoption rep, really get an individual conversation going about your situation and what you're looking for and what you would, you know, what sort of companion you'd want. And, you know, if you're thinking about adopting a special needs cat, talk to the adoption rep, get all of the information first and see, and, you know, find out in talking with them if it's a right fit for you.
And again, so let us know where we can find Kittykind. Again, that's Petco Union Square. Is that both Saturday and Sunday?
We are actually there all the time.
Oh, every
seven days a week.
Okay.
Yes, our adoption hours, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And on the weekends, Saturday from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Sunday from 1 p.m. to, I think, 7 p.m.
And I have to say, I mean, because I usually go there on the weekends, so I see you guys there. And I mean, it is so hard to pass by and not stop. I mean,
yes.
Really, be prepared to stop. You're going to say, I'm not going to look, and you're going to look, and you're going to fall in love with somebody. And where's your website?
Our website is kittykind.org. That's one word, kittykind.org. And that'll have a lot of other information about us, you know, about our cats. It'll have a link to our Extra Special Cats program that lists, you know, the extra special cats that we have.
And you give help with extra special cats too, correct?
Yeah, all the instructions and, you know, basically do it case by case. We have very experienced adoption reps that will talk to you about everything that you'll need. And if you need assistance, they'll help you find something for you.
Great. Okay, so again, listeners, that's kittykind.org. We thank Courtney for talking with us about both the regular wonderful Kittykind cats, which again you can find every day at Petco on Union Square. That's 17th Street and Broadway. You have no excuse not to go. There's a beautiful green market next, right across the street. There's a Starbucks. So there's no excuse not to go.
Yep.
And also visit kittykind.org and definitely keep in mind a special needs cat. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Courtney.
Thank you very much.
And that'll about do it for this episode of Pets in the City on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank you for listening to us, and I definitely want to thank our guests who really shared some painful stories with us, but also in the hopes that it'll help keep some of us safe, especially Denise Buffett, who New York Post reporter, who just announced on June 8th of this year that she will be bringing suit against Con Edison for allegedly wrongful death of her dog Mushy around this time last year. We were also joined by her lawyer, Peter Gleason, who was able to explain to us a little bit about the nature of the case, because pursuing this kind of case is a little bit different than if it was a human being, God forbid. It's a very, very interesting take on it. We also heard from Celia Singh, whose sympathies we, of course, extend to her. She just lost her dog a few weeks ago in a horrific manner from what is being considered electrocution in Long Island City, Queens.
And also want to thank Blair Sorrell for being an early pioneer in sounding the alarm on this really unusual issue, and who has now evolved her efforts into a website called infoshock.com. And of course, we wanted to thank Courtney Kistler of Kitty Kind, who urges us on National Adopt a Cat Month, which is June this month, to consider adopting a cat. And let's see, I guess my cats Fox and Fish would also urge you to do the same. And finally, just a real quick announcements while we're getting out of here. I urge you to check out some of the fun things that are going on in and around your neighborhoods. For example, if you're in Brooklyn or can go out to Brooklyn, starting on Friday, June 13th, you can get into the New York Aquarium for free from 3 p.m. till closing. And again, that's every Friday starting June 13th. I can't think of a better way to spend a hot summer night than watching the fish and whales and everything else splash around in the water. I might just join them. And also, let's see, if you are in Times Square on June 19th, look up and you might just happen to see your photo of your dog if you submitted it to the Purina Dog Chow Picture Your Dog in Times Square contest. That's when they'll be up on June 19th. If you are in Queens on Saturday, June 21st, definitely check out the ARF ARF City of New York Parks and Recreation It's My Bark Day. That's at the Rockaway Freeway Dog Park between Beach 181st and Beach 83rd Street in Queens from noon to 3. And there is just so much going on. There is a few more things. Saturday, June 21st, Central Park Paws Bagel Bark, say that three times, at the Great Hill Oval, 105th and Central Park West from 7:30 a.m. to 9. That's a lot of fun. You'll have bagels, there'll be dogs. You know, the dogs will be able to be off leash until 9, so it's really a lot of fun. And finally, I would also urge you, if you've never been to the Memorial War Dog Memorial Celebration in Hartsdale Pet Cemetery, which is in Hartsdale, New York, this would be a great year to go. This year it's Sunday, June 22nd, from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. There will also be an adoption event as well. But it would be really great to visit and honor the dogs of past wars. And keep in mind the dogs that are in our current conflicts in Iraq, who are helping our soldiers do everything from sniff out bombs on the sides of the road to helping keeping them healthy, both physically and mentally. So again, that's Hartsdale Pet Cemetery, Sunday, June 22nd, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. And of course, if you want to know about more stuff going on in your neighborhood, please visit the New York Tales website at www.newyorktales.com. This is Diane West talking to you from Pet Life Radio on Pets in the City. I want to thank Pet Life Radio once again for having us on, and of course our sponsors who make it all possible. And as my friend Kevin would say, I'll talk to you when I'll talk to you. Bye-bye.
New York, the glitz, the glamour, the exciting Mutt-tropolis, the sparkling kitty city that never sleeps. Join us each week for Pets in the City with your host, Diane West. Celebrity pet sightings, hot events, and news and reviews with the hottest movers, shakers, and tail waggers in New York. So take a bite out of the Big Apple with Pets in the City every week on demand only on PetLifeRadio.com.